The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
For some of you who are not familiar with me, let me give you a little bit of background. Much of my influence and my love is the study of Kabbalah. Although Israelite is certainly not a Kabbalah organization, but I've been very personally influenced by the teachings. When I was 17 years old, I went to Israel for the first time, and I went to the Western Wall. And at the Western Wall, a very religious-looking man, Hasidic-looking man with a long black coat and long side curls and a long beard, things were very long, came up to me, and in a broken English he said, "I teach Kabbalah. You want to learn Kabbalah?" Now, the only thing I knew about Kabbalah is that it's forbidden. And so, without hesitation, I said, yes. Something forbidden? Great. And this rabbi took me under his wing and began to teach me Kabbalah. I did not really understand almost anything he said, not only because it was Kabbalah, but because he taught me in Hebrew, and I didn't really know Hebrew so well. So that made it a little difficult. But I stuck with it, and I have something to share with you. Something to share with you. And what I want to talk about as an introduction to this event is the relationship between expectations and reality. And when I was, when my son was 3 years old, you know, in Yerushalayim, you have these stone floors. And it's all cold and for kids playing on stone floors, whatever. So we told our son Yehuda, who was at that time 3 years old, he just celebrated Bar Mitzvah last Shabbat, but at that time he was 3 years old, we told him that Mommy and Daddy, Abba and Ibra, are going to go buy a rug. So he was very excited because he could go buy a rug. So we went to the store, and we were struggling with the color of the rug. So we asked if we could take one of those little samples home to see if it fits the color we want. So we went home and brought this little sample of a rug, and we put it on the floor to see how it looks on the floor. And we left it there. Our son came home from his child care, and he walks in, and he is so excited. The rug has been delivered, right? And he's been waiting for this rug. So he starts getting all his toys, right? And he slips all his toys over to this little sample, which is not much bigger than really this, right? But it's the rug, right? So he sits on it, and he tries to get his toys onto the rug, and he's having a hard time. Like, how do you do this? Because I know you have a rug, you're supposed to, you know. And finally, he just goes crazy because he can't sit on the rug and play with his toys at the same time. And he finally goes, "This is too small," right? And I use that as an example of how sometimes we have expectations, and then sometimes we have reality. And how do you bring harmony between your expectations and the reality? Now, all the more so with a retreat like this, because what I struggle with a retreat like this is it's at a very, very difficult time. And it's even more difficult than I had anticipated. It's in a difficult time for the Jewish people, for the land of Israel, for those of you who followed, but in depth followed what happened to the residents of Gush Katif. The country has gone through, I believe, a national trauma. One of the most serious, I mean, there's 26 synagogues in Gush Katif that are being destroyed. That's more than happened in Kristallnacht, right? And it is Jews that are destroying synagogues. Now, I'm not going to go into, is it good, is it bad, giving back land? That's not for now. But it's an extremely painful time for the Jewish people in general. But then all the more so is a certain terrible catastrophe that is, we're all aware of, that's happened here in the United States. And so I struggle with how to have fun and be happy at a time that's so painful and so full of sorrow. How do you take your expectations and how do you harmonize them with the reality? And I have to tell you that this is a struggle. On my way to the airport from my home in Yerushalayim in Jerusalem, listening to the news, and the guy went on for about an hour about 1,000 killed in Iraq, and it was just going on and on and on. And the taxi driver turns to me and says, "It's all bad news." He hasn't said one good thing. So really, in general, how does one feel comfortable being happy when there's so many people in the world that are sad right now? And really, quite frankly, I really struggled a good part of my life with happiness in general. I don't feel, and I don't recall, having a particularly happy childhood. It wasn't a depressed childhood, but it wasn't a very happy childhood. And I think it's very clear to me why. My mother is a survivor of the Holocaust. That plays very much into who I am, what I do, why I teach what I teach. And I was very connected to my mother's pain, and am connected to my mother's pain, but all the more so because my mother didn't talk about her pain. So I was really only left to my imagination, which might even be worse than the reality, of what that pain might have been. And only now, as an adult, looking back at my childhood, I think I realize now that it was difficult for me to be happy because I felt I was abandoning my mother. That in some way I was betraying my identification with my mother if I were to be happy. But even more so, I felt guilty about being happy because I thought that was a betrayal of my connection to the Jewish people who've had such a sorrowful history as far as I kind of understood. So, although again, my childhood was not a depressed childhood, and I have, Baruch Hashem, loving parents, and we lived a great standard of life, and I had no lack of toys, but there was this sadness that I grew up with as a child, feeling that this is an abandonment of my mother, this is an abandonment of my people. And I realized that even later on in my life, that even when I was happy, I would sabotage that happiness. Because again, I would feel like happiness is illegitimate. And it sometimes hits me also. Last week I went out on vacation with my family, my wife, walking down the beach holding my wife's hand, and the first thing comes to my mind is all the single people who aren't married, right? And then I'm playing with my children, and immediately comes to my mind the people who don't have children. So my question here is, what is the relationship between happiness? How does one truly achieve happiness? And how does one truly achieve happiness in a world where there's a lot of unhappiness? And I think the solution that I found that really works for me is marijuana. I'm just joking. I do much, much more serious things than that. But anyways. What really caused a radical change in my life is Torah. Because Torah solved for me this struggle with happiness in the most amazing way. Because, and I think you might find this shocking, but because Torah teaches us that the goal in life is not to be happy. And I think that's very difficult for people to hear, especially in our modern world. The goal of Jewish life is not to be happy. The goal in Jewish life is to be miserable. I'm just joking. I couldn't help myself. But now I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay? You'll forgive me. Okay. So, she's happy. She must not be Jewish. Huh? Says Meisel. Because she is Jewish. You know, really, what Torah teaches us is the goal in Jewish life, life in general, is not to be happy. The goal in life is to be holy. And the question obviously is, what's the difference between happiness and holiness? And I think this is so challenging to the modern mind, because I think most of us have been raised with the sense that the goal in life is to be happy. But so many people are not happy, which would mean that so many people are going to die, right? Totally unfulfilled. And I think one of the wisest statements I ever read was from a psychologist who said that the greatest impediment to happiness is the desire to be happy. The more you want to be happy, the more difficult it is to actually be happy. It's like pinching yourself. Are we happy now? Are we having a good time now? Jewish teachings explain that the goal in life is to be holy. But what is holy, and how does it differ from happiness? And are holy people in the end less happy? But I want you to understand that the solution to happiness is to forget about it. To forget about it and focus on holiness. What is holiness? Holiness, the word for holy is kadosh. And the word kadosh in Hebrew, lahakdish, means to dedicate. Essentially, a holy life is a life dedicated to a higher purpose. That's a holy life. A holy life is a purposeful, meaningful life. And quite frankly, I'd rather be living a miserably meaningful life than a happy, meaningless life. Because a miserable, meaningful life in the deepest, deepest place is a very deep kind of happiness. So the difference between happiness and holiness, happiness in the general sense, the way most people would understand happiness, is satisfaction. Self-satisfaction. And holiness is just as much about satisfaction as self-denial. The holy life is the life whereby I'm able to say yes to no. Now, in our society, saying no to yourself, saying no to the gratification of your desires or your satisfaction, seems ridiculous, right? I read this one cute line where this comedian says, "I decided to go on a diet. I swore off drinking and heavy eating, and after 14 days, I lost exactly 2 weeks." Right? Because that's what you do. You lose 2 weeks of your life. Why would you deny yourself satisfaction? Why would you deny your eyes the delights of anything you desire? Holiness asks a very difficult question, but it is the question that differentiates us from animals. And that question is there something more important than you feeling good? Right? Is there something more important than your personal self-satisfaction? Are there times where you do say no to your own desires for a higher purpose? Because really happiness in the secular sense is satisfying my desires. But holiness is satisfying God's desires. And that holiness is that sense that my life is dedicated to serving a purpose greater than myself, and therefore sometimes it's uncomfortable. I would say some of the most holiest people I've ever met are the people who lived in Gush Katif. Because if there was ever a place that one could imagine is pretty uncomfortable living, right? With 5,000 mortars falling all over the place, and miracles left and right, these people had a sense that there was a purpose, there is a purpose greater than their personal comfort. But that's a very unusual idea in our society. A fellow comes to a doctor and says, "Doctor, what are my chances of living till 100? The doctor says, "Well, do you indulge in food?" He says, "No, very careful." He says, "Do you drink alcohol?" He says, "No." He says, "Do you have a wild sex life?" He says, "No." He says, "Well, why would you want to live to 100? See, that's the definition of happiness. And in fact, that is what Freud said. Freud said that the basic preoccupation of the human being, like an animal, is to satisfy his needs, his desires. And yet Judaism comes and says, no, what differentiates us from animals is that we say yes to no. The differentiation between ourselves and animals is that we have altars in our lives. And an altar means that I'm willing to sacrifice something that I personally want, that might personally make me feel good, for a purpose much greater than myself. That's Kedushah. That is a life of holiness. And what is it that most of the time we actually sacrificed on the altar? It was an animal. Because we are sacrificing the animal within us that says what is most important is that I feel good and that my satisfactions are fulfilled and that my desires are fulfilled. And we take that animal and we externalize that, put it on the altar, and we give up our animal to become a human being. And the human being asks a basic question. After satisfaction, what? What then? Generally, I find that those people who are really searching in their lives are people who have really succeeded in so much already. They financially have gotten what they wanted. Right? They have sexually gotten what they wanted. And suddenly they're shocked with, how come I don't feel satisfied? Because the difference between an animal and a human being, whereby animals have needs, a human being has a need to be needed. Whereby animals want to be satisfied, human beings have a need to satisfy. And if I don't feel I'm satisfying someone other than myself, I don't feel satisfied. That's what's uniquely human about us. So animals, they're happy. Throw your doggy a bone, he's wagging his tail. But human beings, we've come to this world to be holy. And therefore the struggle with happiness is that people have made that into a goal. Modern secular society sees happiness as the ultimate goal. My personal happiness is the ultimate measure of the value and the success of my life. And in Judaism, the answer is, forget about happiness. Because as a human being, your goal is holiness. A life that is purposeful, that is meaningful. What is the meaning of meaning? The meaning of meaning is that I am a means to an end greater than myself. When a person becomes the be-all and the end-all of their life, that's ultimately the end of their human life. But when I feel that I am a means to an end greater than myself, that I am serving a purpose greater than myself, God's purpose, then that brings a deep, deep sense of value to myself. That becomes the fulfillment of the human being. And as once described to me, what is the difference between an animal and a human being? If an animal is hungry, and you put in front of that animal a bucket of water, that animal will drink that water. But if a human being is just as thirsty as that animal, and you put in front of that human being a bucket of water, it is possible that human being will not drink that water because today is Yom Kippur. And there's something higher than the immediate satisfaction or gratification of my desires. The human being asks the ultimate question. After satisfaction, after I get all my needs met, then what? And the answer is, but do I feel that I'm fulfilling a need? Am I needed? Am I serving a cause greater than myself? So, what's the answer to happiness? The answer to happiness is to forget about it. Now, the question is then, does that mean that holy people are miserable, and but at least they're holy, right? And happy people are happy? No. Because Judaism teaches us that ultimately when holiness becomes your goal, which is a purposeful, meaningful life serving God's purpose, then the byproduct of that really is a deep sense of happiness. A deep sense of personal value. Because I'm really doing something in the world. So let's go back to my original question. How are we to have a fun, happy time at this retreat when thousands of residents of Gush Katif have been displaced from their homes, don't have jobs, don't know where their kids are going to go to school, and now we add to that, how can we sit here and feel happy when we know that thousands of people in New Orleans have been displaced from their homes? How can we be happy for the next 3-4 days? And the answer is, if you've come here to be happy, then somehow you're not in touch with life. And I didn't come here to be happy. I came here to have a holy time. A holy time means that I've come here to refocus, to recharge, and rededicate myself to a purpose greater than myself. And I will feel happy. And I will actually be doing something for those residents in Gush Katif. And I will actually be doing something for the residents of New Orleans. And I'll actually be doing something for all those people in the world who are deeply being challenged right now with much sorrow and pain. Because if I can redirect my life and commit myself to serving a purpose, a divine purpose greater than myself, then I will ultimately bring happiness to these people too. And that's the difference between a vacation and a meaningful vacation, right? Yes, we've come here to learn, we've come here to canoe, we've come here to swim. But if you understand all that as an opportunity to fill yourself with kedusha, with holiness, fill yourself with the focus of wanting to live a more meaningful, purposeful life, serving a purpose, a divine purpose greater than yourself, then after 3 days being here, we will go back to our communities, we will go back to our families, we will come back to the world and bring them so much more energy, bring them so much more help. And so this is a vacation, but this is a meaningful vacation. And I believe when our focus is holiness, then the happiness comes along with it. So my prayer here, my little blessing to us all, we have such an amazing opportunity. I mean, we've been doing this for 6-7 years perhaps. And thank God we always get such fantastic people. But there's lots of places one could go to have fun. And we'll have fun. But meaningful fun. Because there's vacations and there's holy days. A vacation is to vacate, to empty oneself out. But a holy day or a holiday is to fill myself with holiness. So my little blessing to us all is that we not waste these days and turn it into some final vacation of the summer, but really turn this into a holiday. Thank you very much.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.